It's not the FDA. And it remains to be seen how he could be effective in this position if he's confirmed. The one thing I'll mention is that Dr. Oz, specific to CMS, is he's a supporter of Medicare Advantage and increasing privatization of Medicare. Medicare Advantage already covers about 54% of people under Medicare, and we think that's the wrong way to go. We'd like to see traditional Medicare strengthened so that there will be a level playing field. Medicare Advantage often overcharges the federal government, and it's strengthening it, making it even more lucrative for private insurers is not the way to go.
Dr. Robert Steinbruch, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Public Citizen Health Research Group Director. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with a remarkable team. Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Hannah Elias, and Dennis Moynihan. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Maddie Eliana Ozbeck, Emily Anderson. To continue to watch our coverage of COP29 here in Baku, Azerbaijan, we'll be here for the whole week. Go to democracynow.org. Tomorrow is Women's Day here at the UN Summit, and we'll be bringing you women.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs, as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights, and much more. Tune in and listen to Free Culture Radio on the third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Pacific here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Pacific Northwest and Northern California recover from a bomb cyclone.
An Oregon school district has to cut a fifth of its budget due to an accounting error.
And the city of Portland is set to pay out its largest settlement in a slate of police excessive force cases.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Althea Billings. The bomb cyclone of intense wind and rain bypassed most of Oregon, but the rest of the Northwest coast was not so lucky. The storm system gets its name from the explosive power that it derives from rapid pressure drops. It combined with an atmospheric river and dumped over a month's worth of rain, hurricane-force wind gusts, and feet of snow around the Pacific Northwest and Northern California. The National Weather Service in Medford said it was one of the most intense on record for its location, a storm that occurs about once a decade. Over 650,000 people in Washington and around 100,000 in British Columbia lost power last night during the cyclone. Two Seattle-area residents were killed by falling trees. Interstate 5 was closed at the California border due to blizzard and whiteout conditions, but it has reopened since. Flood warnings are widespread in Northwest California. Another bomb cyclone could develop and rapidly strengthen just off the West Coast on Friday. This system is expected to be weaker than the first, but could usher in another round of damaging winds and torrential flood conditions. Today was sunny in Portland, with showers expected for the rest of the week.
The Corbett School District, east of Troutdale, will cut a fifth of its budget, meaning layoffs for teachers and staff. The superintendent says the hole in the budget is from accounting errors allegedly made by the district's longtime accountant. Superintendent Dr. Derek Fialskowitz says a financial error hired over the summer dug into the books and found the errors. There are over 1,000 students in the district and nearly 90 teachers. 10 employees will lose their jobs, and some students may end up with a new instructor mid-year. Some teachers and community members say the info they've gotten is vague and unclear about when exactly the errors were discovered. The school district's regular meeting is tonight at 7 p.m., and the agenda will include a financial report and recommended corrections. Down in the Willamette Valley, Albany teachers are still on strike for a second week. It's the first time Greater Albany public school teachers have been on strike in nearly 40 years. 600 educators are on the picket line, pushing for smaller class sizes, more prep time, and better pay. The outstanding issue seems to be prep time, which is different for elementary and high school teachers. The district says they've agreed to 90 minutes of prep for high school, but they disagree about when it should start. The union wants it to begin in February, and the district says they want to wait until next school year.
The city of Portland will pay the largest sum in a slate of lawsuits against the Portland police in connection to their use of excessive force during the George Floyd demonstrations 4 years ago. Police Sergeant Justin Damerville has been repeatedly accused of using excessive force, especially during this period. Dustin Ferreira alleges Damerville kicked his wheelchair and pushed him forcefully in the back on September 28, 2020. Minutes after Ferreira complained to Damerville about his use of force, Damerville allegedly grabbed him by the arm, lifted his wheelchair off the ground, and zip-tied his wrist together as an arrest. Damerville accused Ferreira of interfering with an officer, second-degree disorderly conduct, and menacing. The Multnomah County District Attorney's Office decided not to prosecute him a day later. Damerville claimed the police supervisors had called an unlawful assembly around 11:30 p.m. and an hour later arrested Ferreira for refusing to leave. Damerville went to federal trial last week for another alleged instance of excessive force when he pepper sprayed a woman in the face the same night. A jury ruled in his favor. He resigned from the Portland Police Bureau in May of 2022 and now works for the Brentwood Police Department in Tennessee. Ferreira told Coin News, quote, "No amount of money will ever fix or solve the amount of trauma that my community and myself experienced through that protest. But what it does do is it allows me to live a little more comfortably," end quote. Portland City Council voted to approve the $400,000 settlement today. In total, the city has paid out over $3 million for injury claims or lawsuits involving police brutality with demonstrators, according to the city attorney's office.
Groups that fight for a free and open media landscape are speaking out against Brendan Carr, President-elect Donald Trump's choice to lead the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC. They're convinced it would have big implications for all Americans. Suzanne Potter has more in California.
President-elect Donald Trump's choice of Brendan Carr to lead the Federal Communications Commission is raising red flags among groups that advocate for a free press and consumer protections. Carr is currently the top Republican on the Federal Communications Commission. Craig Aaron, president of the public interest nonprofit Free Press, says Carr has already refused to condemn Mr. Trump's calls to pull the broadcast license of the ABC television network.
That should be an easy question for an FCC chair to answer. Are you going to go after ABC's broadcast license because they fact-checked the debate? The correct answer is no, that's ridiculous. And what Brendan Carr essentially said testifying in Congress was, well, I'd have to look at it. That's not the answer you want.
The FCC regulates radio, TV, and cable communications, so its decisions have big implications for Californians and all Americans. Carr also wrote the Project 2025 chapter on media issues, saying the FCC should rein in big tech, promote national security, and emphasize prosperity and FCC accountability. Under President Joe Biden, the FCC has strengthened consumer protections and approved net neutrality rules. Aaron says he worries those protections will go out the window and fears the FCC will change the rules to allow mega mergers of media companies.
If you just allow the cronies of the administration to buy up these local TV station networks, infrastructure, then that's another way you can take control. And Brendan Carr's never met a media merger he didn't like.
The position of FCC chair does not require Senate confirmation, so Carr is likely to be appointed. However, any future vacancies would require Senate approval. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Mail-in ballots with envelope errors will not be included in the Pennsylvania Senate race recount. Trump taps celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz to oversee Medicare and Medicaid, and Senate Democrats want to vote on ending arms shipments to Israel. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This election and the incredible mandate that President Trump has and the support I have is a recognition that we need to shake things up.
Republican Pennsylvania Senator-elect David McCormick is looking past a recount, although current Democratic Senator Bob Casey has yet to concede. The margin in the race is below 0.5%, but Republicans are claiming victory now that the state Supreme Court ruled mail-in ballots with incorrectly dated envelopes can't be counted. The GOP now has exactly the 218 seats it needs to lead the House, but a Southern California race is still too close to call. Republican incumbent Michelle Steele trails Democrat Derek Tran by about 100 votes in a contest where the lead has flipped several times. President-elect Trump has nominated former PA Senate candidate and celebrity doctor Mehmet Oz to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
I'm not a politician. I'm a surgeon. And what surgeons do is tackle big problems by working with everybody.
The agency oversees health coverage for millions of older, poor, and disabled Americans. Trump has also nominated Wall Street executive and campaign megadonor Howard Lutnick as his next Commerce Secretary. The Senate is expected to vote today on a resolution against arms sales to Israel. More than 40,000 Palestinians have been killed since Israel launched the war in Gaza. Independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says it's illegal to send weapons to any country violating human rights.
The United States of America is complicit in these atrocities. That complicity must end, and that is what these resolutions are about.
The U.S. has provided Israel with more than $18 billion in aid over the past year. Trump has vowed to begin mass deportations immediately on entering office, with help from the military. Immigrants and groups that work with them are preparing with training that explains people's basic civil rights. Antonio Serrano with the ACLU of Wyoming says he expects to see a significant increase in arrests.
Don't be like somebody who thinks, well, this is never going to happen to me. We just want to teach people their rights so that way we can hopefully make folks feel a little more empowered.
Democratic state and city officials are saying they won't cooperate with the deportations. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey says state police will not help. And Boston Mayor Michelle Wu says her administration will protect residents however possible.
That we are not cooperating with those efforts that actually threaten the safety of everyone by causing widespread fear and having large-scale economic impact.
And finally, New York prosecutors say they oppose any effort to dismiss Trump's hush money conviction, but will consider delaying sentencing until he finishes his second term. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Sarah McBride is the first openly transgender person elected to the U.S. House of Representatives and Congress in general. She also served in the Delaware State Senate as the first openly trans person to do so. On Monday, a House Republican filed a bill to ban trans people from using facilities on Capitol Hill that match their gender identity. And today, House Speaker Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson announced a new policy barring transgender women from using Capitol bathrooms also matching their gender identity. These actions continue a GOP crusade against transgender rights and come as a part of a broader political culture war strategy. Lauren Powell from the Human Rights Campaign says this is an attempt by Republicans to gain attention through discrimination. South Carolina Republican Nancy Mace says her bill's purpose is to, quote, stop individuals from accessing or using single-sex facilities on federal property other than those corresponding to their biological sex and for other purposes, end quote. Johnson said, quote, women deserve women's only spaces, end quote. The Capitol does have some gender-neutral bathrooms, and each representative's office has its own bathroom. Initially, McBride pushed back against Johnson's announcement, saying this restriction was no more than a distraction from issues like housing and health care. But today she posted on X saying, quote, I'm not here to fight about bathrooms. I'm here to fight for Delawareans to bring down costs facing families. Like all members, I will follow the rules as outlined by Speaker Johnson, even if I disagree with them. Serving the 119th Congress will be the honor of a lifetime, and I continue to look forward to getting to know my future colleagues on both sides of the aisle, end quote. 14 states currently have laws that prohibit transgender people from using the bathroom that corresponds with their gender identity, according to the Human Rights Campaign.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with David Koff and Jonathan Stark, here to preview Fake Radio's performance of It's a Wonderful Life on this Saturday at the Multnomah Arts Center. At 6, it's Sea Change Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a chance of rain until 7 p.m. The low is 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 52. Today in history, in 1999, Transgender Day of Remembrance was founded by a small group to memorialize the murders of Black transgender women Rita Hester and Chanel Pickett in Massachusetts. Since then, it's been observed in 185 cities through more than 20 countries. The quote of the day is from queer theory scholar Sarah Lamble, who said, quote, "None of us are innocent. We must envision practices of remembrance that situate our own positions within structures of power that authorize violence in the first place. Our task is to move from sympathy to responsibility, from complicity to reflexivity, from witnessing to action. It is not enough to simply honor the memory of the dead. We must transform the practices of the living."
Multiple major Native American groups are criticizing new post-election data that they say is misleading and harmful. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Four major Native American groups are criticizing the presentation of Native voters in exit polls for this year's presidential campaign. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, they say the data is misleading and potentially harmful.
In a joint release, the groups say exit poll data from Edison Research for the National Election Pool is concerning, given limits in scope and methodology. They say the sampling of 229 Native Americans does not reflect the diversity of Indian country, and add that exit polling was done at only 279 polling places on Election Day and 27 early in-person voting sites, and none were held on tribal lands.
The numbers weren't quite adding up for us.
Michael Johnson is president of Illuminative. He says earlier work done with the Native Organizers Alliance on what's called the Indigenous Futures Survey showed different results from the Edison NEP research.
While 48% of our community aligned with liberal ideologies, 52% of our community considered themselves moderate, conservative, or had no alignment to a party. And when we started seeing the exit poll data from Edison NEP, this didn't seem to square with some of the research we had done in our own community.
But many major news outlets went with Edison NEP's findings, which showed 34% of Natives in key battleground states identifying as left-leaning, and 65% as right-leaning. Johnson says this is inaccurate and harmful.
The pervasiveness of misinformation creates a bias towards things that we don't know or communities that we're not a part of, and adds to the stereotypes, biases, and miseducation, and stands in the way of solidarity for all of our communities.
The other two groups contesting the Edison Research NEP data are the Native American Rights Fund and the National Congress of American Indians. In a statement, Edison Research tells National Native News that given factors like the small sample size and the potential sampling error, the survey data should not be taken as a definitive word on the American Indian vote. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
After securing key state permits, hurdles remain for a Canadian energy firm's plan to reroute an oil and gas pipeline around the Bad River Tribe's reservation in Wisconsin. As Danielle Kading reports, that includes renewed calls from tribal leaders to shut down Enbridge's Line 5.
Bad River Tribal Vice Chair Patrick Bigboy says he's shocked and upset with the state's decision to grant permits for Enbridge's reroute. The company proposed a new 41-mile segment around the tribe's reservation after the band sued the company to shut down and remove Line 5 from its lands. Big Boy says he wants the pipeline completely out of the Bad River watershed.
It's now at the headwaters, which compromises more of the reservation and the waterways, wetlands, all of the things that are in line with the river and the flow of the water.
Big Boy says the federal government should uphold the tribe's treaty rights and water quality standards and deny federal approval of the project. Enbridge's Midwest Operations Director Paul Eberth says federal regulators will determine if its reroute poses impacts downstream.
We expect to be able to, like we did with the state, meet the conditions in order to be able to secure a permit.
An attorney for the tribe says they're evaluating next steps for a legal challenge. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
This week, tens of thousands of people demonstrated outside the New Zealand Parliament to oppose a bill Maori people say threatens their rights. Reuters reports the bill was introduced this month by members of Parliament who want to reinterpret a more than 180-year-old treaty signed between Indigenous people and the British. Videos across social media show people holding Maori flags and speakers talking about Indigenous rights, culture, and solidarity. The demonstration came days after an Indigenous lawmaker started a haka in Parliament to protest the bill. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Tis the season for celebration and good cheer. However, for many people, the absence of a loved one, whether through death, divorce, or another painful separation, can make this time of year feel almost unbearable. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 64% of people with depression report the holidays just make them feel worse. Corewell Health psychiatrist Dr. Ibrahim Sablaban offers a surprising insight. He says sadness is one of the most universal human emotions and should be embraced.
The worst thing somebody can do is really try to suppress feeling human, really suppress feeling lonely, feeling sad, feeling a sense of loss. It's very easy to say, oh, I need to get my mind off of so-and-so who passed away, but that's not the healthy way forward.
If you or someone you know is struggling with a mental health crisis, help is available 24/7. Call or text 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, to connect with someone for free and confidential support. The Pacific Northwest long winters and reduced daylight can also worsen depression, especially for those with seasonal affective disorder, the aptly named SAD. Dr. Sablaban advises sharing emotions with trusted family and friends and reflecting on happy memories of loved ones.
To be able to embrace the traditions and the things that you shared with that individual, even if they're not in your presence, to be able to keep those things alive.
Mental health professionals also emphasize that while family traditions can provide comfort and remembrance, it's okay to let them go if they become too painful. Explore new ways to celebrate, and over time, new traditions will naturally evolve.
The U.S. House Committee on Ways and Means introduced a bill in September that sounded straightforward and positive, and even generated bipartisan support. But the Stop Terror Financing and Tax Penalties on American Hostages Act, aka H.R. 9495, is more complex and sinister than its name suggests. The bill would postpone certain tax filing deadlines for Americans and their spouses who are wrongfully detained or held hostage abroad. But it would also give the Treasury Secretary the power, without further input from Congress, to strip the nonprofit status from any group determined to be, quote, a terrorist-supporting organization. Since Hamas and Hezbollah are officially considered terrorist organizations, any group supporting Palestinian rights could be a target. The unilateral power to investigate and effectively shut down any tax-exempt organization, including news outlets, universities, and civil society groups, could be used for political reasons, not just protection from terrorism. Texas Representative Lloyd Doggett said, quote, I think in view of Trump's election, this bill basically authorizes him to impose a death penalty on any nonprofit in America or any civil society group that happens to be on his enemies list and claim that they're a terrorist, end quote. Many groups oppose the bill, including ACLU and Oxfam. The bill failed to meet the two-thirds margin to pass originally, despite 52 Democrats voting for it. But it's now been fast-tracked, so we'll only need a simple majority to become law. The House Rules Committee passed it on Monday, and it will go to a vote on the House floor on Thursday.
The U.S. Senate is working to confirm President Joe Biden's judicial nominees, including one Oregon judge who had been waiting for a year. That's even as President-elect Donald Trump accuses Democrats of seeking to stack the courts before he takes office in January. Suzanne Potter has the details.
On Tuesday, President-elect Donald Trump called on the U.S. Senate to stop confirming President Joe Biden's nominees to federal judgeships, even as civil rights groups are pressing for just the opposite. Some 26 of Biden's nominees still need Senate approval, five of them from California. Lena Zwarenstein is with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, part of a coalition that recently wrote to senators urging them to prioritize Biden's nominees.
There are about 900 lifetime judges. The first Trump administration had 234 confirmations. We could be facing that again, which would mean, you know, more than half of the judiciary may end up being judges who have been appointed by the incoming president.
The Biden administration has confirmed 218 judges over the past 4 years, and the Senate has scheduled multiple votes for this week. Republicans have taken votes to slow the process down, but Democrats are motivated to get this done before they lose the majority in January. Zwarenstein notes these federal judgeships are lifetime appointments.
So every single one of the seats that we can fill now, hopefully will be with somebody who is fair-minded, ethical, and does have a commitment to everybody's rights. And I think this is an important guardrail for our democracy, especially knowing the threats ahead.
Federal judges often make highly consequential decisions on topics that include educational equity, immigration, fair pay, access to health care, and the constitutionality of book bans. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
With changes afoot in Washington, D.C. this next year, advocates of school choice are pursuing changes in the American education system with a renewed sense of purpose. Mark Richardson has more.
Advocates of school choice say the post-election changes on Capitol Hill would lead to a new push at the state and federal level for charter schools. With the re-election of President Donald Trump and Republican control of Congress, social conservatives are showing a renewed interest in providing new education options for families. At a meeting in Washington, D.C., activists discussed this renewed push for change to education. Nirvi Shah, who originally reported this story for the Hechinger Report, covered the meeting and says the message has an unusually bipartisan tone.
They're certainly projecting an image of unity and that this is a very parent-friendly issue, not a political issue. I don't know that that will come to pass when it comes time to vote on legislation or for Trump to take some kind of executive action, but it's worth watching.
School choice has been a contentious issue in many states, with teachers' unions and others accusing voucher proponents of undermining the public school system. In advance of a new GOP-controlled Congress, lawmakers are proposing choice legislation that has until now been a non-starter. The issue takes on a different focus when discussing school choice in rural areas. While several states, including Arizona and Florida, have successfully developed alternative schools in similar towns, states such as Texas have faced pushback from rural areas. Cha says the rural schools tend to dominate a community's culture.
I have all these connections and intersections. I certainly don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but in some rural communities, that just is the reality. That the school is the center of the community.
Shaw says Republicans' push to eliminate the Federal Department of Education is causing concern. The agency distributes a lot of money, and choice advocates are concerned they would have to find alternate revenue streams.
What happens to all of those programs, I think, is the big question. So if you eliminate the department, is the Treasury administering all those programs? Do those programs somehow go away? What happens to that money? I think there's a lot of questions about that.
For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is done with the election. Now, how do we fix next year?
So many people pointing fingers as to who's to blame for Trump's victory, they might run out of hands. There are multiple factors, the cyclical nature of history, and figuring out the cause won't change the result, though it could keep this from happening again. You get what you anticipate. So to all you gloomsters, I say, let's expect a mild, bright winter. Let's expect a couple Republican senators to have backbones and a sense of constitutional responsibility. It's one thing to throw out plans and quite another to get them to happen. Remember that most of the people who voted for Trump have as much to lose from his reign as any of us. Even more, since people in the Red South get a greater per capita share of government benefits than us in blue coastal states. We'll all be suffering together, so no need to add more suffering and separation to things. Trump won't be able to stop the days from getting longer. Maybe Christmas gifts will get a little more practical, just in case, but the best gift anyone can give any day is their time and friendship. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Althea Billings, Eliza Yurkov, and Ken Jones. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Richardson, Suzanne Potter, Edwin J. Vieira, Mike Moen, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Thanksgiving's coming up next week, and that means the start of the holiday season. Retail stores will have you thinking it started in July, but it really only feels like Christmas when the network starts showing our favorite holiday films, Miracle on 34th Street, A Christmas Story, Elf, Bad Santa, and of course, It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life is about small-town America and how a good man, Harry Bailey, in a moment of despair, wishes he'd never been born. A guardian angel named Clarence helps Harry learn how much he means to other people, and in the end, good triumphs over greed and iniquity. We can all use a guardian angel right about now, but barring that, we still have the movie. And thanks to our friends at Fake Radio, the nation's premier all-time radio comedy troupe, we now have a live onstage production of the radio play. The only Portland performance of Fake Radio's It's a Wonderful Life takes place this Saturday, November 23rd,